Hi, I'm Mark Manichevich, and this is Governance Bites. I'm here today with Sam Stubbs, CEO and founder of Simplicity, and we're here to talk a little bit about governance. Thank you very much for your time, Sam.
You're welcome, Mark.
Hi. My first question for you, Simplicity is now 5 years old, and it was a dream trial when we first met while I was still at the FMA a number of years ago.
Yeah.
When you first established Simplicity, how did you go about setting up the board? What was involved in that process of creating the board?
Yeah, look, I think there are two things. There's in theory what you should do and in practice actually what happens. So in theory, you should, and if you possibly can, you should set up a skills matrix, which basically says, what are the skills we need in total? Because no one individual is going to have everything. And therefore, how many people do we need to tick most or every one of those boxes? So we started out with five directors with a broad range of skills. Now that's in theory. In practice also, filling those depends on the organisation you are. If you can pay for the director, then you can go into a contestable process. If you're asking, like we did, for it to be a volunteer position, you only have so many people to ask, right?
Yes.
So you have to be a little bit malleable about that, depending on your ability to fund directors. But that's basically how you start out. The way you don't do it is to hire your friends or people who you think will agree with you.
Right.
All the time, which is the temptation, right, that we'll set up this almost like fictional governance body. All it ends up being is a stamp.
Yes, right. You want people that are going to challenge you and disagree with you and so forth.
And agree with you a lot, you know, but have a common vision and common goal for whatever organisation you're with, but who do have the ability to challenge you, because otherwise it becomes effectively a benevolent dictatorship.
Yes.
And usually they go wrong. Well, sorry, may not be benevolent, just be a dictatorship. Mm. And they don't usually last that long.
Yeah. Right. Now, Simplicity is a fund manager, established 5 years ago, now $5 billion under management.
Yeah.
What did you expect from that board in the first 12 months of its existence, and how did it deliver on that?
Yeah, so look, I think in the first 12 months, the board will tend to be a little bit more hands-on than it would after the business is operating. So you tend to get a lot of, I call micro decisions being made by the board, and that generally involve around policies and procedures that you set up for the first time. So you're setting up a framework of, in our case, documented policies and procedures because our regulator asks for that. So they're getting their hands quite dirty in the first 12 months. The other two things they're doing or should do are the things that they will always do, and that is hire the chief executive, right? So, but you know, often it's the other way around. Often the chief executive sometimes finds a board. But in theory, if you say it with a board, you hire chief executive. And then agree a strategic plan. So those are the two things that a board should always be doing. But in the first 12 months, you will tend to hire directors who are happy to get their hands dirty.
Yes.
And get involved a little bit more in, you know, most importantly, these policies and procedures are pretty important because they will set the tone for how the organisation operates going forward.
Absolutely, right. So on an ongoing basis then, can you just give us a brief description of the difference in role between what the management team should be doing and what the board of directors should be doing?
Yeah, so and this is really important because often the management team will feel like they're directors, and often the directors want to dive down and get into the weeds and manage the business. So what the directors should do is hire the chief executive, agree the strategic plan, agree policies and procedures, and then basically get involved in active board decisions where, you know, policy decisions are made, and then trust the chief executive to enact them, right? So come up with a series of expectations as to what the chief executive needs to deliver, and then let them deliver it. What the management team are responsible for is delivery of what they've been asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what the board doesn't do is manage the business, micromanage, and particularly the most dangerous thing they can do is manage around the chief executive,
right. Because
that is very disempowering. It tells the chief executive's reports, oh, the chief executive is not that important because I deal directly with a board member, right?
Yes.
So that's very disempowering. Equally also, the chief executive job is to deliver up to the board what the management have actually executed and make sure the board are fully informed about a delivery to the strategic plan. So there is a hierarchy there, and some cultures emphasize that hierarchy more than others. But even in what you would call a democratic liberal environment like New Zealand, the basic principles are the same. the board sets the policy, empowers the chief executive to manage to those policies, the management team manage to those, and the chief executive reports up.
Right, I've got a good friend who says the job of the board is to fire the CEO.
hire and fire. Absolutely.
So actually taking a step back a little bit then, and you've answered this to some extent, what exactly is governance?
Gosh, that's a huge question. But I mean, I think about it this way. If you thought about a sailing ship, governance is making sure that the ship is able to sail. Right, so governance is making sure that there is a ship, there are sailors, there are a crew, you know, all the things you need. The actual sailing of the ship, the putting up of the sails and the pulling in and the steering of it, that's done by the management team and the chief executive. But making sure that the ship is fit to sail is basically what they do. That is governance. And so that inevitably means that you are involved in all of those things that are fundamentally required for the business to operate. So, and what I mean by that is those are policies and procedures. So you can't hire someone unless you know how you're going to hire people, how you're going to fire them, how you're going to pay them, all of those things that you agree to. And then once you've got that, once you've delivered that, you let the management sell the ship and let the chief executive sell the ship.
Right, okay.
And if the chief executive is doing a really good job, they've only got their hand on the tiller, sometimes their little finger, because everyone's doing their job. And it's a perfectly balanced ship. The other role of the board is when the ship fails or founders or crashes or something goes disastrously wrong, they are there, chief executive is there to report back up to them, and they are there to manage the crisis effectively. And in theory, the reason you have, you know, in theory, some many older, wiser people with the skills matrix is they're able to bring that wisdom and experience to the circumstances when things go wrong. So and it's their job to be there for you know, you want to spend as much time mitigating the possibility of there being anything wrong. So, you know, that's why you set the strategic plan.
Right.
Because it's designed to achieve the strategic goals and not go wrong. But when it goes wrong, you need to be there to help.
And that's the board's role of risk management.
Well, you know, it's that the board needs to be the fence at the top of the cliff.
Yes.
Stops you falling off. But once you've fallen over, it also needs to be the ambulance at the bottom.
Right.
And the more time you spend building the fence, the less time you'll be the ambulance at the bottom, right?
Absolutely.
So that's why you have policies and procedures.
Yes.
That's why you have a strategic plan. That's why you hire a chief executive who can do the job that is required.
Now, you've been CEO of major businesses, both not-for-profit with Simplicity, but also for for-profit businesses.
Yeah.
So been involved in the governance role, reporting to those boards on both sides of the fence. What is the difference, or how is governance significantly different for a not-for-profit?
Yes and no. So it is similar in the sense that these are organisations, they have people, they have cash flow, they have goals and objectives. So there's not that much difference in that sense. There tends to be in the governance, though, because in a non-profit, you tend to get people who are doing it for love, not money, right? And when you get it for love, then people, you know, decisions made out of love are sometimes decisions that were different if you do them for money, right? So you can tend to have people who've been in the organization for a long time and feel a sense of entitlement because they're given so much of their time and their love and their energy. You can get decisions which are made which tend to be a little, let's call it softer, because you're not involved, you don't feel as if this is the hard world of commerce that you're dealing with. You tend to get incredibly lovely, impassioned, kind, caring people there. Often, though, that can prevent them from
making the
tough decisions and sometimes making the best decisions. So there are pluses and minuses. They're slightly different. That sometimes there can be quite marked differences between a non-profit and a for-profit board. But fundamentally, the board's being asked to do the same thing.
Right, so the job's the same, but the people you get on those boards can be different, and their motivations are different, and they have internal challenges making decisions because of their own passion for the product.
Yeah, and look, you know, in a non-profit and say a sporting body board, people are there for the love of the sport, right? So, and everyone's there for the love of the sport. So the sometimes the very tough decisions that you may need to make that involve people or codes of conduct or whatever, sometimes they can be hard for those board because that's not why they came there, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that's in an uncomfortable place, whereas in a for-profit board, that's a little bit more the rough and tumble of commerce.
It's probably why we're getting a trend here, and I'll ask you in a moment about what's happening overseas, to get more independence on the board in not-for-profits and sporting entities as well as for-profits. So you're getting people with an objective lens coming.
Yeah.
Which leads me to my next question, and you stepped into this a little bit earlier, about any significant differences between what governance is here in New Zealand versus Asia, Europe, other parts of the world.
Yeah, look, it is a little bit different because inevitably, you know, governance is just a group of people, right? You know, the governance. And the group of people reflect the cultural environment that they come from, right? So the boards that I've been involved with overseas have differed fundamentally. In some areas, you know, for example, boards in North America, they tend to be much more outspoken, quite forward here, a little bit more genteel. And then in Asia, sometimes very respectful and very hierarchical, where no one speaks out. So, there's a little bit of cultural difference. But the fundamental thing about what a board should do, if you read the corpus of literature in any country about what corporate governance is about, it would be pretty much the same. They'd be saying the same things. This is the group of people who are supposed to govern the overall direction of the business, not manage the day-to-day, but govern.
To oversee.
Very important. Yeah, very important.
Right.
Very important distinction. And that can happen in non-profit and you know, sporting body boards, because people tend to have come from being volunteers, you know, on the pitch, on the mat, on the field, or where it is, and then they graduate up through enthusiasm and, you know, they get asked it. And so the temptation to micromanage is huge.
Very high. Yeah. We've also come from a paradigm where quite often in sports you were essentially managed by an executive committee, and then the elevation to governance was the executive committee trying to govern, but it was still managing. So we've had a change over the last kind of 30 years in New Zealand, where sports organisations are moving more to a corporate governance model of having a proper board of directors separate from management doing different jobs.
Sure.
There are still sports out there that haven't separated.
Well,
like that.
You know, and as there's more money and more professionalisation and more paid employees and all those sort of things, you know, modern sport looks much more like a business than it did 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
Sure. And so it has to operate that way if it chooses to be that way.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's just the way it is.
It does create some great opportunities, I think. And you've got, you know, with stronger governance, you get better growth because they know where they're going. Right?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, sports, it's a competitive, you know, it's not competitive within the sport, it's competitive with other sports, right?
Yes.
So you need really good governance in those organizations, because you are fundamentally competing with every other sport for the heart, souls, minds, attention and sweat of the athletes.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Sam. That's been
you're
fantastic.
Welcome. Yeah,
great to see you.
Great chat as always.
I look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay,
and
cheers.
See you next episode.
Bye-bye now.